Welcome back to Keeping Up With Data. I'm Paul. This is
Sean.
Today we're joined by a tremendous guest, Purul Oberoi. She's the in senior leadership at Toyota Finance Australia, formerly at EY as an associate director. But more importantly, she's a terrific human, an amazing guest. Purul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Paul. And thanks for a wonderful introduction.
That's my pleasure. Look, today we wanted to bring you on just to not only talk about yourself and some of the interesting things that you're doing across AI, data science, and that evolving landscape that we're seeing sort of change almost daily.
Welcome to Keeping Up With Data. Keeping Up With Data is the podcast that keeps data enthusiasts up to speed with what is happening in the data world. We bring in the leading minds from the data industry to talk all things career, news, embarrassing stories, failures, and successes.
Before we get into all of that, though, we want to understand a bit more about yourself and your background and what led you to a position where you wanted to lead within data science and AI, I suppose.
Yeah, sure. So I started my career back in 2008. So it's been over, 15 years? I started as a fresh young graduate, a computer science software graduate. Worked in 3 years in the software industry, but then I quickly realized that my interest is also towards management side. So I pursued further studies. I went to Singapore and Dubai to do my MBA in finance and marketing. And after that, I was working in Malaysia. I started as a management consultant, more around the strategy side, but in the technology space. And while working with technology clients back in 2012, I quickly realized that the technology landscape is changing rapidly. So even at that time, things like big data, cloud were picking up. So I realized quickly that the future is going to be more data oriented rather than just core strategy consulting. So that's when I shifted my career slightly to more data driven decisions.
Yeah.
Started more around BI and insights and all of that. But then slowly I repivoted my career more around data science and then eventually around AI and thing. Because if you look at the maturity curve of data, it starts with the basic like dashboarding and descriptive, then it quickly moved towards more of predictive and then prescriptive and then automation and AI. So I think it's very important to keep up with the learning curves. And I did a lot of formal education as well in terms of post-graduation and all that. And I've been, I think, lucky to get been working with some really amazing organizations, especially my consulting background, wherein you get to work with different clients from different industries. I think that's where the learning accelerates. So, I think if I look back, it's been a long journey, but I feel the way the industry is changing, we have a long, long way to go.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's something that we've certainly noticed as recruiters, you know, what we used to hire for even a few years ago has completely changed.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting. One question that we always get, though, is how do you adapt to such drastic changes in a relatively short period of time? I mean, how do you go from working on that foundational Power BI reporting stuff that you've mentioned into transitioning into like data science and AI? How did you find that, I suppose?
So there are many ways of doing that. For me, formal education was the pathways. And I still back that up because I feel that's the best way to get to know everything in a structured manner in a, let's say, a 12 to 18 months course. But I understand everyone has limitations. There are financial limitations because these courses are costly. You need to dedicate time for it. People have other things as well going on. So another way I would say is that collaboration within your organization, because nowadays every organization has a data office or a data center or something like that. So I would suggest that talk to the leaders in your organization, pitch yourself that you're interested in. I think most of the organization these days are very accepting. They have that great deal of acceptance toward people who really want to upskill themselves. But I would say, even if you don't get that, there are so many ways in upskilling yourself. There are courses on Udemy, DataCamp, pretty cheap courses. You know, you can just upskill yourself in 4 weeks, 6 weeks, or 8 weeks. You can go on GitHub, do actually live projects as well. Yeah. So I think there are, if you have the will, I would say you will definitely achieve that. And then try to apply that somewhere in real life projects. Yeah. That's the key, I would say.
It's a bit of a controversial one, isn't it, when it comes to the educational piece? Like 10 years ago, when I first started out in recruitment, everybody was like, no, if you don't have a degree in computer science related to the specific role, or if you don't have a degree in finance with experience in analytics, you're not going to be successful for the role. But I think as things have evolved and time has moved on as well, I'd almost challenge that mindset now where people say looking for a degree is an essential part of a role. I don't think I've been asked that in 5 years, unless it's very specific machine learning type roles that you do need a PhD in, for example, to have that research background. But from a more broader perspective, what would your thoughts be now versus 10 years ago when that may be the top of everyone's mind, even for yourself as a manager, a leader, bringing people into your team? Mm-hmm. That was probably at the forefront of your mind, where it's maybe now fizzled out a bit.
Absolutely. I think when we look at roles, I personally look at more practical experience because you can have a PhD, but if you have never applied that education, then, you know, you're as good as a fresher, I would say. So education definitely helps because it gives more credibility to your skills. But at the same time, if you don't have practical experience, and by the way, when we are talking about practical experience, it's not just the technical experience, but also how you manage stakeholders, how you break down complex topics into simpler terms. So a lot, it's a package that I feel in today's time, everyone wants all-rounders. You know, everyone wants that person who is great technically, has hands-on, can communicate well, strategic thinker, blah, blah, blah. So I think it's not possible, by the way. But to answer your question, yes, things have changed. Companies are more often looking for practical experience, relevant experience. And education still is helpful in my personal experience because that's worked for me. So I have a slight bias towards that.
Sure.
But if, let's say, I would have never gotten a chance to apply those skills, then it's of no use.
Yeah, it's the fundamentals, isn't it? It's like building a house. Can't do it without the foundations.
Yeah,
exactly. It's funny that you bring up that point around, you know, people looking for those all-rounders, those unicorns, how we term them in the recruitment industry. Yeah, and it's, I wish I could just take that snippet and just give it back to some of them sometimes, just because it's, you're looking for the stakeholder management, the technical skills, the project experience, the commercial, the educational background, and it's just not realistic. But I think, like Sean mentioned there, it seems that there is more of a focus shift towards the practical stuff and that side of it. And we actually met with a manager this morning just discussing, you know, where AI is heading. And he had a very interesting sort of point of view. I'm curious to get yours in terms of like what excites you in the AI adoption phase that we're all seeing.
Yeah.
Where do you see it heading, basically?
See, I would say it's both a reality and a hype at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would like to put it. It's a reality because we are seeing AI getting adopted in simpler terms, like automation. It's everywhere. Chatbots, natural language processing, computer vision, they are real life practical applications. So it is a reality. It's a hype as well because not many organizations have been able to fully adopt AI at the same time due to multiple reasons.
Mm.
The leadership lacks strategic vision. It's not really aligned to the company-wide strategic vision. There are data issues because anything, your AI or any kind of models is as good as your data.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like trash in, trash out, right? So if your underlying data is trash, it's not of good quality. It's still working in silos. It's only as good as that. And then we are also grappling with stuff like governance because with the likes of ChatGPT and so many other generative AI and things come, there is a huge focus, especially in Australia, I've seen, on governance. How do we ensure it's responsible, it's ethical, and the privacy of the customers is not compromised? So I would say it's a combination of many things. It's a reality because it's there. But also at the same time, I would say it's a hype because people fear that AI is there, so it will replace my job. The way I see it is that AI is there to augment your work. It's there to minimize the repetitive tasks that, let's say, a call center person is doing, for example, and focus on more strategic thinking or more complex decisions as compared to more repetitive decisions which can be automated.
So yeah.
I'd have 2 points on that. Yeah. One, what would your thoughts be around that? Seeing the CEO of Microsoft had come out the other day and said, with the AI hype and boom over the last 2 years, no company is actually getting real value from AI. And this is the CEO of Microsoft saying, he's like, we've sold hundreds of AI packages. No one is getting actual value or ROI from it at this stage. So there's a lot of teething issues around exactly the data governance piece, or is the data correct to actually get the ROI down the line?
Yeah.
Where do you see that comment in relation to the last 2 years development-wise, having seen it in field and obviously colleagues and that sort of stuff in the space?
So see, I would say it's a maturity curve.
Yeah.
Similar to, let's assume we go back 10 years. So similar to what you were asking, things like BI, dashboarding, descriptive analytics was how people used to perceive data analytics. Now it's more, later on it was more on data science and predictive and prescriptive. That tasks can also be automated to some extent because of low code, no code solutions that have come up, right? People are now questioning, why do we even need data scientists? You know, because you have these low code, no code solutions. So similarly, I think AI would also go through that maturity curve. It's not yet there, like I said, because value can be demonstrated to multiple ways. Is it only commercial that we're talking about? Is your organization really ready for it? Have you worked on the foundational data concepts, etc.? So if you have not, if the organization hasn't worked on the foundational concepts, AI will not help, right? So I feel that AI will go through and is going through that maturity curve. Maybe in 5 years, 10 years, we all will start accepting it and companies will also start embracing it. But those organizations will only be the one who put the seeds today, right? If you're not putting in seeds today, if you're not taking active steps today, it might be hard to catch up 5 years or 10 years down the line.
Do companies need to peel it back? Like now, if you're, for example, if somebody is listening, they're a manager or a founder of a business and they want to have that strategic forward AI vision, but maybe they've been in business for 10, 15 years, so relatively startup scale-up environment. Do those type of companies need to look back at the last years of data and really clean what they've got?
Absolutely.
Before they go forward? Because it would be a recipe for disaster if it's all not the right information.
Absolutely.
Would that be a starting point for businesses looking to?
I think so, because in my personal experience, like I said, trash in, trash out. So I have seen organizations who are still grappling with siloed data. There is no single source of truth. Data has still not been fully migrated into cloud. It's still lying in legacy systems. It's going to be very hard, not just AI, but it's going to be very hard to even point out the value of data-driven solutions, let's say data science, because there is no single source of truth. So I think any organization who really wants to adopt AI needs to first look at their foundational core elements. Is your data clean? Is there bias in data? Is there a single source of truth? And then map it to a strategic vision of what are the tasks that we can potentially automate? What are the bottlenecks that we have as an organization? Let's say call center, I was giving an example. Mm-hmm. If somebody's in a medical profession, you know, they have heaps of data, text, diagnostic reports, patient reports. So it's a way of automating it, but without working on those foundational core elements, it's a recipe for disaster. And the comment that you were saying, we're not seeing value. You're not seeing value because they've never worked on the core concepts.
I like that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm sort of circling back now, but the AI governance piece, you sort of brought up that in Australia, it's quite unique. There seems to be a lot of emphasis on it. And I've seen that as well with a lot of people that we speak with. It seems like AI governance and ethics is the next, or is their main focus.
Yeah.
Why is it so maybe uniquely Australian focused, or, you know, why isn't it as, you know, much a priority elsewhere? Like, I'm curious to understand that element, I suppose.
I mean, my answer can be a bit controversial, but I feel that as a country, it's a good thing that it's safety first in everything, safety first. So even in terms of adopting something, we are more of followers than the innovators.
Yeah.
That's what I have seen. Yeah. The same applies to the data industries. Mm. We usually follow more as compared to taking the leap of faith and innovating. And it's not a bad thing, because at the end of the day, even in the organizations that I'm working for, it depends on the industry. So, for example, the financial services is a lot more, there's a lot more scrutiny around it. You need to have guardrails in place, and you need to have a governance framework in place for the right reasons, because you are dealing with huge amount of private customer data. Similar to, let's say, healthcare, for example, you are dealing with sensitive data. So it's not a bad thing to have governance in place, but I feel that's more to do with the country DNA that we have.
Yeah.
That we are more of followers, and we want to ensure that it's proven, and then we adopt something.
Yes,
it's similar with the data protection and GDPR laws in Europe.
Yes.
Like 10 years ago, even 8 years ago, all that I ever heard, I'm from Ireland, which is where it was, I think, it originally created from. And it was just data governance related to get your customer data right, secure, etc. And that was 8 years ago. And maybe 2 to 3 years ago in Australia was when data governance, we need to implement data governance. We need to have this data governance solution and framework. It's like, you don't need to implement data governance. Everyone should be doing this from day dot of when an organization is founded, making sure your customers are safe.
Mm.
So there's no big, huge, I won't name any names, but companies that have had major data breaches and leaks.
I think Samsung was one of them, I remember.
Samsung?
Yeah, 1 or 2 years ago, I think.
I'm a Samsung user.
I heard a story that they accidentally posted on ChatGPT, I think some private
confidential,
confidential information, and it became like a huge row after that.
It's scary. It's something to look out for, I think, that, you know, as we're grasping this, all these new tools, and every other day there's a new, you know, LLM that's being released. For is it LeChat in France? And then there's obviously DeepSeek that was in China. And like, people are uploading all this confidential information without realizing where it's going and who's now got access to it.
Does that comment come up for you a lot, Pauline, when you're looking at roles like AI governance? Is that a thing that is constantly talked about, or is it more we just need to build these cool solutions? And
I would say massively so. So it's interesting when you're speaking to clients in the US, for example, where they're a lot more innovative focus and more just like, we're going to build this, and these are the engineers we need, and go. Whereas here it's, you know, we have to protect our customer data, we have to look at the governance piece first, and that's where a lot of the interest is coming from. Like, there are some major consultancies who I won't name, but that's like their entire focus at the moment, where it's just like AI governance and ethics. We need those leaders, those principles to be brought in so that we make sure we protect our client data and things like that. So I just wanted to get your
well, I've recently seen some companies as well that they are having specific role around AI governance.
Yeah.
They want leader who can specifically just build those AI governance framework.
Yeah.
AI ethics as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like
we
were working on a chief of AI ethics role just to come in and educate the whole business, not do anything but just educate.
The literacy is important, AI literacy is important.
It's something that we're still grasping with as well, but I suppose for our audience, you know, massively one of the key things that we get asked about all the time is, you know, how do I step into the AI leadership space? You know, you'll see people on LinkedIn that just slap AI on their new title on their sort of blurb, and it's there's no AI piece associated with them. So
I guess
my question to you is, you know, if you are a data professional, or if you want to step into that world, aside from like the traditional courses and, you know, going to universities and those things like that, what would you recommend someone can do to educate themselves?
I think it's very important. There are so many forums these days, I feel, networking forums, and there are specific AI forums which are happening. I would say that's a good starting point. You meet with like-minded people who are in similar situations, or maybe organizations who are ahead of the curve, the likes of IBM, Curl, OpenAI. They are really pioneers in AI, I would say. So that can be a good starting point to network with like-minded individuals, because I understand every organization has their own limitations. So the exposure that you're getting within your organization may be limited. But there are so many forums out there, which I feel is a good starting point. And then second is to also educate yourself. I know a lot of firms right now are just focusing on AI literacy. They want to train their leaders, especially because it's top-down. If the leader doesn't understand AI that well, it's likely to just follow. So I feel that we really need those strong leaders at the top who at least understand and can advocate for AI. And I'm not saying that we need to compromise on the safety and all of that. That's definitely should be at the forefront. But we need strong leaders who understand that, who are well-rounded, who have that exposure of working with different organizations and who bring in that strategic vision.
Yeah.
And I feel that would help the people at the lower levels of the hierarchy to also upskill themselves gradually.
Uh-huh, yeah. Good point to know. And I mean, it's a question that we like to ask our AI or data science leaders, but if you had to predict one thing in the next 5 years, maybe the next step in the AI direction, and it can be outlandish, don't worry, no one's going to hold you to court if it's if it's not accurate, but what do you see in the next 5 years for AI, if you could sort of teleport then?
I think a lot of stuff that we are working on will definitely get automated. We are already seeing reporting is getting automated. Even the work in data science that we are doing is getting automated because of low-code, no-code solutions. Repetitive tasks are getting automated, but I think one thing which would still remain is the strategic thinking, the creative thinking. I think that is something that you cannot take away from. You have an output, but how do you interpret that output? How do you explain those output to the business stakeholders? So I feel that the industry is changing rapidly. A lot of roles will get redundant. It's already happening, which I feel will continue to happen in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
So only the best would still survive,
mm-hmm.
The ones who constantly upgrade themselves. That's not just for individuals, but even for organizations.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I know a lot of organizations where you are grappling with poor leadership,
mm-hmm.
where they don't promote, let's say, AI as much.
Yeah.
Whether people are really going to want to stay with those organizations, it's questionable, because people will want to upskill themselves, and if they're not getting the right kind of exposure,
uh-huh.
they're likely going to move to different organizations.
Yeah.
I'll name a bold statement, then I'll name the company because they've posted it themselves online. Klarna. Do you know those guys?
Yes.
Have you seen the news about them recently?
No.
So they got rid of 2/3 of their staff and were, I won't say leading the way, but came out with a bold statement to say, we're going to get rid of all these people. Their roles can be replaced with AI. It's probably 18 months ago.
Mm.
The founder of the business has now done a full 360 and is like, everything we've implemented from an AI perspective, we now need to reverse and get everybody back in, because there's too much complaints about the automation from our chatbots, from our customer service, from all of these lower level roles that have been made redundant.
Yes.
They've tried, tested it. They're a huge company. Well, not huge. They were.
Yes.
Got rid of all of the people from that customer service and day-to-day mundane jobs, implemented AI solutions to replace them. And now they've done a full 360 back to, okay, that didn't work. That didn't get us customer satisfaction. We're actually losing revenue because of these AI things that we've implemented that aren't working. What's your thoughts on that?
See, I think that's where the problem is, that we should not induce fear in people. AI is not to replace jobs. AI is to augment your jobs, improve your efficiency from, of course, repetitive tasks, yes. You know, you need to get rid of those. But instead of losing your people, you train them or you upskill them to focus on more important or complex tasks. So I think that is where organizations need to communicate the message very clearly. Because at the moment, what I'm seeing is that a lot of companies are inducing fear in their employees that AI is there, I lose my job.
Mm.
Similar to, like I was saying, data science as well, we do get asked these questions. Why do you even need data scientists? For example, there are these low-code, no-code solutions. But what we are missing the point is that who are there to interpret those output? Who are there to improve your models? We still need to have data scientists for that. And that's the same for the example that you were giving. Chatbots or etc., they may not be able to provide the same level of efficiency which a personalized service can provide. Mm-hmm. So it's a chicken and an egg situation, I would say, to me. But as leaders, if we can promote the idea that AI is to augment our work and not to replace the jobs, and then look at best way to automate the repetitive tasks, the low performing tasks, which are not adding value, but upskill your employees towards more complex tasks, more creative tasks, more strategic thinking tasks, I think that's where the real value will come in.
Absolutely. Just speaking from those, using those chatbots, customer assistance things, I'd lose my head.
Yeah, I'd want to throw my laptop out the window talking to one of them.
You don't get that. You will want to talk to a human at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But you probably still need those chatbots for normal queries.
Sure. Yeah.
May not be for complex things, right? So you need to be able to have that discretion. Where do I need my human personnel to focus on, and where can I leverage technology, which will free up the bandwidth and they can focus on more important tasks. More important.
When I'm doing it with those chatbots, I'm just like, I need to speak to someone. Yeah. I need to speak. And it's like, what is your problem?
Exactly.
Click this button. What is your problem? Click this button. I'm like, I need to speak to someone. And then eventually they're like, okay, we'll get you a human.
Your human agent.
It's like, yes, AI, you couldn't fix my problem.
They're getting more and more stubborn as well. They're like,
they're fighting back.
But no, it's interesting. Parul, before we let you go, we did want to obviously talk about one of the side things you do. You run a YouTube channel. It's called Ask Parul, I believe. Talk to us about that. What is it? And
So I started that channel about 2 years ago. As a leader, I have a lot to share with my audience. It's not specifically around AI, but it's combining my knowledge of my professional journey that I've had. I have finance background, so it covers finance and investments and the personal upliftment. So I feel that if you look at any individual, these are the three things that people struggle with the most. Professional upliftment, people want their finances to be sorted and, you know, want to live a well-rounded life. So I wanted to create a channel which aligns with my underlying purpose and passion, and where I can use my learnings professionally and personally to educate people. And I have audience not just in Australia, but in the US, Canada, UK, India. So it gives me more broader perspective. And the education which I provide is data-driven because I'm from a data background. So that data background is important. While at the same time, given that in my day-to-day work, it's more about communication. So that's what I end up doing. I communicate with my audience using social media. Yeah. So I think I found that healthy balance where I can leverage my professional experience, but also at the same time cater to a wider audience.
Yeah.
And that's something I enjoy doing.
Absolutely. So if someone just types in Ask Parul, you should come up and they'll be able
to. Absolutely. I think so.
Will you be using any AI tools to enhance your YouTube channel?
ChatGPT a lot. I've used ChatGPT a lot.
Yeah.
Dolly for image creation.
Nice. Yeah.
Because you can just generate automated thumbnails using Dolly, which is for image creation.
I find ChatGPT, every time I do it, image creation through ChatGPT, it can't get the spelling of in the images correct. I did a datapreneur / entrepreneur post, and it couldn't spell entrepreneur right, no matter even when I said you're spelling it wrong.
Correct.
This is how to spell it, please use it this way.
Correct.
And it won't put it on the image.
Dolly,
it's better.
Dolly is better, not the free version of ChatGPT. That's only good for textual, but if you have to use image, there are now Dolly and
I've paid one for ChatGPT.
Yeah, it's paid, but it's helpful. I mean, if you're doing it full-time, then obviously it's helpful, but it frees up a lot of your time. That's such a, I would say, beauty of ChatGPT. I use it very much.
Yeah, no, we use it.
Exactly, to efficiency, to use the efficiency for getting the greater good and a better
time. Find your message, you know. You put a script that it will refine it for you, remove all grammatical errors and everything. So imagine the amount of time that you are saving.
Yeah.
AI.
Absolutely.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Bada bing, bada boom. Well, I think we'll end it there. That's a really good point. And thanks again for coming on, Parul. It's been wonderful to get your perspective on data science and AI and where it's headed. But yeah, I think on behalf of Sean and I, it's a really good episode. And yeah, we'll be keen to have you back on again in
5 years' time and see if your predictions are true.
Yeah. We'll hold you to it. We've got on.
See, these are just predictions and nobody can predict the future. Even until I would say 2 to 3 years ago, nobody knew generative AI and ChatGPT. It just came from nowhere, like a boom.
Mm-hmm.
And now everyone is talking about it.
Yeah.
AI has been around since 1950, so they say.
So they say.
But generative AI, things like ChatGPT and others.
Came out of nowhere.
Came out of nowhere. I would say, in the last 2 to 3 years.
Crazy.
Alrighty.
That's all.